Vardenshire left the section's apartment on Artillerygarten at 6 on Thursday evening with a feeling that he was under ominous clouds of turmoil, of imminent ruin. For several weeks he had known that his title as director, that is, chief of the section for special analysis, was but a meaningless label. His opinions, protests, and entreaties carried no weight. Clinton had taken over all decision-making. If the section had been an open and public institution, this would not have been a problem. He would simply have gone to his superior and lodged his protests. As things stood now, there was no one he could protest to. He was alone and subject to the mercy or disfavour of a man whom he regarded as insane. And the worst of it was that Clinton's authority was absolute. Snot-nosed kids like Sandberg, and faithful retainers like Nystrom, they all seemed to jump to obey the fatally ill lunatic's every whim. No question that Clinton was a soft-spoken authority who was not working for his own gain. He would even acknowledge that Clinton was working in the best interests of the section, or at least in what he regarded as its best interests. The whole organization seemed to be in freefall, indulging in a collective fantasy in which experienced colleagues refused to admit that their every movement, every decision that was made and implemented, only led them one step closer to the abyss. Vardenshire felt a pressure in his chest as he turned onto Linnégatan, where he had found a parking spot earlier that day. He disabled the alarm and was about to open the car door when he heard a movement behind him. He turned around, squinting against the sun. It was a few seconds before he recognised the stately man on the sidewalk before him.
"Good evening, Herr Vardenshire," Ed Clinth said. "I haven't been out in the field in 10 years, and today I felt that my presence might be appropriate."
Vardenshire looked in confusion at the two plainclothes policemen flanking Ed Clinth. Boblanski he knew, but not the other man. Suddenly he guessed what was going to happen.
"It is my unenviable duty to inform you that the Prosecutor General has decided that you are to be arrested for such a long string of crimes that it will surely take weeks to compile a comprehensive catalogue of them."
"What's going on here?" Vardenshire said indignantly.
"What is going on at this moment is that you are being arrested, suspected of being an accessory to murder. You are also suspected of extortion, bribery, illegal telephone tapping, several counts of criminal forgery, criminal embezzlement of funds, participation in breaking and entering, misuse of authority, espionage, and a long list of other lesser, but that's not to say insignificant, offences. The two of us are going to Kungsholmen to have a very serious talk in peace and quiet."
"I haven't committed murder," Vardenshire said breathlessly.
"That will have to be established by the investigation."
"It was Clinton." "It was always Clinton," Vardenshire said.
Ed Clinth nodded in satisfaction. Every police officer knows that there are two classic ways to conduct the interrogation of a suspect: the bad cop and the good cop. The bad cop threatens, swears, slams his fist on the table, and generally behaves aggressively, with the intent of scaring the suspect into submission and confession. The good cop, often a small, grey-haired, elderly man, offers cigarettes and coffee, nods sympathetically, and speaks in a reasonable tone. Many policemen, though not all, also know that the good cop's interrogation technique is by far a superior way to get results. The tough-as-nails veteran thief will be least impressed by the bad cop, and the uncertain amateur who might be frightened into a confession by a bad cop would in all likelihood have confessed everything anyway, regardless of the technique used. Blomqvist listened to the questioning of Birger Vardenshire from an adjoining room. His presence had been the topic of a good deal of internal argument before Ed Clinth decided that he would probably have use for Blomqvist's observation. Blomqvist noticed that Ed Clinth was using a third variant on the police interrogator, the uninterested cop, which in this particular case seemed to be working even better. Ed Clinth strolled into the interrogation room, served coffee in china cups, turned on the tape recorder, and leaned back in his chair.
"This is how it is. We already have every conceivable forensic evidence against you. We have, accordingly, no interest whatsoever in hearing your story, save as confirmation of what we already know. But the question we might want an answer to is, why? How could you be so idiotic as to decide to begin liquidating individuals in Sweden, just as we saw happen in Chile under the Pinochet dictatorship? The tape is rolling. If you have anything to say, now is the time.
If you don't want to talk, I'll turn off the tape recorder, and then we'll remove your tie and shoelaces and accommodate you in a cell upstairs, while we wait for a lawyer, a trial, and in due course, sentencing.
Edclinth then took a sip of coffee and sat in silence. When nothing was said for 2 minutes, he reached out and turned off the tape recorder. He stood up.
I'll see that you're taken upstairs in a few minutes. Good evening. I didn't murder anyone, Vardensha said when Edclinth had already opened the door.
Edclinth paused on the threshold.
I'm not interested in having a general discussion with you. If you want to explain yourself, then I'll sit down and turn the tape recorder back on. All of Swedish officialdom, and the Prime Minister in particular, is eagerly waiting to hear what you have to say. If you tell me, then I can go and see the Prime Minister tonight, to give him your version of events. If you don't tell me, you will be charged and convicted anyway. Please sit down, Vardensjö said.
It was evident to everyone that he was resigned to his fate. Blomqvist exhaled. He was there with Figueroa, Prosecutor Gustafsson, the otherwise anonymous SEPO officer Stefan, and two other altogether nameless individuals. Blomqvist suspected that one of them at least was there to represent the Minister of Justice.
I had nothing to do with the murders, Vardensjö said when Edclinth started the tape recorder again.
Murders? Blomqvist whispered to Figueroa.
Shh, she said. It was Clinton and Gullberg. I had no idea what they intended, I swear. I was utterly shocked when I heard that Gullberg had shot Zalichenko. I couldn't believe it. I simply couldn't believe it. And when I heard about Björk, I thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Tell me about Björk's murder, Edclinth said, without altering his tone. How was it carried out?
Clinton hired some people. I don't even know how it happened, but it was two Yugoslavs. Serbs, if I'm not mistaken. Georg Nystrom gave them the contract and paid them afterwards. When I found out, I knew it would end in disaster.
Shall we take this from the beginning? Edclinth said. When did you first start working for the section?
Once Vardensjö had begun to talk, he could not be stopped. The interview lasted for almost 5 hours.